Hello. Welcome. Welcome back. Episode 30 for sure this time. It's not episode 29. It's not episode 31. It's episode 30 of the Ops Team. The sometimes, occasionally here.
Hey, it's 2017. Yeah. All right. That's all you got to know right now. Yes. So we're back. Yeah. We're back for giving you some relevant news. There's plenty to catch up on. I know that, like us, you may have been on vacation and doing other things.
Not for 4 months.
So we're catching you up. Well, yeah. Me almost, seven. But you know. Like,
this is a 6-hour show. We're going to start with what happened in October. No, I'm kidding. The last episode, there were five of us. There was myself, Oz, Damien. You weren't here, were you?
No.
You'd already gone.
Julian
and William from the Canadian sub. And it was just obviously too much for us to handle, five people, and then the election. It was just too much. So we had to take 4 months off, essentially, from the Ops Team. But we're back, and we have a new member of the team, of our technical evangelist team, Osvaldo. So tell us, introduce yourself, welcome to the group, and let us know what you do.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be with you guys here. I'm a brand new in the team, but I'm not new in Microsoft. I'm almost 7 years in Microsoft, working in other country in Brazil, and then I moved to here to this incredible team. And
you didn't point it out. Yeah, just point it this way.
So, it's like incredible over here, team. The incredible team.
Yeah.
Continue. Yeah.
My focus is not exactly the ops side. My focus is more than a dev side, but we work together in a DevOps world. So the Microsoft world, Microsoft Fabric, Azure Functions, that will be more. I'm focused on this, and I'm going to try something news about for the last 4 months.
Yes.
Highlights.
Exactly.
Highlights.
Right.
Highlights.
Exactly. Right.
So 2 hours for me and 2 hours for
you. Beam's great. Yeah. I mean,
you can.
Yeah, he can play us at double speed, and we'll get through it very quickly. Now, for those of you not familiar with the show, we take 5 minutes each, approximately, to
5 minutes plus 4 months.
Yes, yeah, 5 minutes to condense 4 months worth of information each on our respective areas. So David's covering DevOps, I normally cover on-prem infrastructure and Azure Stack.
Open source.
Azure Cloud for the platform as a service perspective, microservices.
Cool, excellent. So there's your four areas, and obviously we have a lively debate about each of those as we go forward. And to determine who starts the show, typically, and what order we run in, we have a spinner. In this case, it's this highly technical pen.
There's a banana.
Banana, I actually ate it, so it'd just be a banana skin, unfortunately, which wouldn't spin as well. But the reason these markers, these dry erase markers are in here is because we've had a bit of a change within the studio. This is now the Ops Team studio, which you may be able to see here. We've slightly graffitied that. All whiteboards around, so very functional, but we'd have to step away from the mic to do some writing, so we're not going to do that. So should we determine who goes first?
That's you. I just spun it. And it's you.
It's me to start.
Yeah. So it's been a while since I've just done on-prem stuff. I can just stick to 5 minutes of talking, which I'm sure people will appreciate. Right. So my 5 minutes starts on on-prem stuff. Now. There we go. Oh, thanks. Move the camera. I'll wiggle over this way. So I've got loads of stuff to talk about. I've just opened the wrong browser window there. Had my stuff lined up in Edge, and I just opened Chrome by accident. Just force of habit there. So, first thing, in the last couple of days, actually, I think it was yesterday, the blog post went live, or the day before. January 10th. So today, there you go, hot off the press. Some news about some new enhancements in Hyper-V in Windows 10 in the latest Insider build, which is now reached build 15.002. So 15,002, now available for those of you who are fast ringers. That might not be the right term to describe people on the fast ring, but there you go. So a couple of new improvements for Hyper-V, and the blog post that I'll link to will provide it in graphical form, but a nice new virtual machine quick create experience. So if you want to quickly create, as the name would suggest, new virtual machines, easy inputs, quick, nice fluid, and off you go with your new virtual machines. But then there, under the covers, there's some more aggressive tweaking been done around dynamic memory to more optimize the use of your virtual machines, especially when they're starting up. Very useful for people using emulators in Visual Studio. Obviously, that applies to this group as well. I'm not always using emulators, but you know what I mean. Developer-oriented stuff. So a good blog post there, and lots of technical detail within that as well from Sarah Cooley on the Hyper-V team. So cool stuff. Next, sticking with Hyper-V, because I haven't talked about it for what feels like months. If you still read books, like physical books, there is a new book out called the Windows Server 2016 Hyper-V Cookbook, second edition. So the MVPs, Charbel and Patrick, have produced this book in conjunction with the publisher, all about Hyper-V virtualization. So if you're still doing, I say still as if it's not around anymore, if you're doing virtualization, you're interested in 2016 Hyper-V, and there's a ton of awesome stuff in Hyper-V around shielded VMs, around deployment as a nano server, loads of stuff, and it's a great container host as well. Check out the book, 552 pages of Hyper-V goodness.
552.
Pages.
I respect these.
Yes, I would love to have the time. But it's due out this month, January 2017. You can add it to your cart as an, oh, it's an ebook. It's not in print just yet, but it's priced very competitively with other similar ebooks in the market.
Line by line, every code line item of the
Hyper-V. Exactly, yeah, that's it. It's the source code of Hyper-V. That's it. It's an interesting read. So coming forward to Azure Stack, so we're up-leveling above virtualization now. We're talking about platform. Back in November, so we're still within our window of not being here, TP2 released, or an update for TP2 released for Azure Stack, and that brought with it the ability to support PaaS services on Azure Stack. So App Service, adding a SQL Server Resource Provider, and a MySQL Server Resource Provider, which is really important if you're wanting to deploy PaaS-based applications and not just utilize VMs on the platform. So I'll link you to the documentation on all of that stuff. It's very, very useful if you're still kicking the tires with Azure Stack Technical Preview 2 refresh. Make sure you download the updated bits and then deploy the PaaS service on top. And that gives you things like, for example, SQL Database as a Service, MySQL Database as a Service, WordPress blogs, another that type of PaaS application. On the platform, so cool stuff. And it also walks you through how you can use Visual Studio to integrate with Azure Stack TP2. Cool stuff. So sticking with next-gen applications and platforms, we all know and love Docker. There was some cool stuff. Getting started with Docker Data Center, if you're still new to embracing containers, which I know a lot of our IT pros out there are, then there's a great Pluralsight course on pluralsight.com that I'll provide a link to getting started with Docker Data Center from fellow Brit Elton Stoneman, who I had the pleasure of having a call with a couple of weeks back, not related to the course, but on something different. But it's a relatively short course, I'd say, about an hour and a half of your time, going through overview, Docker Data Center, managing images with the trusted registry, and administering Docker with the universal control plane. So four key modules, all about getting started with Docker Data Center. So if it's new and you want to get started, it's definitely worth a shot. Not going to take much of your time, and it was published or at least updated just a few days ago, early in January. So they're my kind of main news topics for this session, this particular, I was going to say this month, but it might be this month, might be this week, who knows when we'll next record. But there is one more thing, and it's a set of mechanics videos that have been published since we last recorded, which was end of September. So there's been some cool stuff that I've had the pleasure of being involved in around unified management across Linux and Windows with OMS and PowerShell, which was great to see how broad now you can manage with a single unified experience in PowerShell. Oh no, where's the timer gone? There it is. There we go. It gets buried in the system tray, and then that's it then. I can't find it. So across Linux and Windows Server with OMS and PowerShell, ClusterOS rolling upgrades, I think we've had on there for a while. Service map for dependency aware monitoring. So if you've got an app that's running either on-prem in the cloud that's got lots of dependencies and it's split across VMs and so on, and you want to know just what it means to make up that application, its key components, and monitor that as a service, then the new service map capability within OMS is a very powerful way to do that. So there's a great mechanics video on that as well that I'll link to. So yeah, that's everything from me. Loads of stuff there, and yeah, it's good to be back with the Ops team.
Woo! Woo!
All right. First one of 2017.
Nice, yeah. All right, you're going to do the spin there?
You want me to spin? Should we go back to the main screen view so everyone can't see the pen? Look at that. Toes.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, do you think? Right, you ready?
Yep.
Your 5 minutes. I remember you're going to that camera over there. It starts.
Okay, yes, it's been 4 months and I'm going to start with the Kubernetes part. Kubernetes is one of the most popular container orchestration platforms available. And in November, I guess, we introduced a preview of Kubernetes on ACS, which means you can easily deploy a Kubernetes cluster running on Azure Container Services.
And that was preview, right?
That's a preview, yeah. Normally, the thing ACS does for Mesos and also Docker Swarm is these orchestration platforms are not super easy to deploy by yourself. So ACS just gives you a better platform so you can just start playing with the platform. It's in preview. And I am highly recommending you to spend some time around Kubernetes, at least learning the basics, because you're going to hear and see and use Kubernetes a lot in the near future. That's my personal view. The second thing we announced is the Azure Container Registry. Everybody starts to work with Docker and containers. And one of the first questions, especially coming from the enterprise customers, are when am I going to keep my images, Docker images? I don't want to put them in a public location.
Like Docker Hub.
Like Docker Hub. I mean, Docker has a private registry to private, but the companies, they're like, for example, I'm from Turkey. Back in Turkey, you're not allowed to put anything out of Turkish soil. So these kind of regulations, these kind of, you know, asks from the enterprise customers, they can use a container registry running in Azure. They had the option to deploy their own registry on premises or Azure running in a VM, but this is more like you use it as a service. So you don't even have to care about what's happening.
Yeah. Well, it's really nice too. I mean, because you're taking a storage account essentially, and you're just paying for the storage that you use, which is super cheap, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly.
But with your Turkey example, the Azure data center would have to be in Turkey, wouldn't it? For your
There's a gray areas.
right, I see.
And something closer to home.
Yeah, something closer to home.
Right. Okay.
So you can keep a copy inside your data center.
Right.
Maybe you can, you know, replicate it and stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm not gonna go into
Turkish law. We
Turkish
don't
want
to. No, no, that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole different ops team. From that. Yeah.
The second thing is, we talked about this in the previous episode, SQL Server on Linux.
We can't assume people remember.
Yeah, it's been like 6 months, I guess.
Four.
SQL Server now runs on Linux. It's in preview. At first, it was running in containers, but right now you can deploy it as a native application on Red Hat, Ubuntu, and SUSE is also coming soon. So it's not, it doesn't have 100% feature parity with the SQL Server on Windows yet. But the core portions of SQL Server is there, and you can just sign up for the preview and try it on yourself. You can obviously run the SQL Server on Linux in containers, which is the preferred way for me to do it because it's just easy to, you know, fire up a container and start using it. But it's super cool to see that we have a SQL Server version running on Linux.
Yeah. So can you do like apt-get install?
It says sudo yum install ms-sql-server,
ms-sql-server.
There is actually a mechanics video on introducing SQL Server on Linux as well.
Stop
Yeah, I've just got it on my screen. Let me give you some useful insight.
There's also a blog post from Brandon Burns about a new Azure Cloud console. It's really useful because up until today we had two options. Like, we either use the graphical interface, the Azure portal, or we use the Azure CLI. Now with the new console coming soon, you would be able to use a page showing you the console on the top and the portal on the bottom, for example.
Like a hybrid thing.
The moment you are logged in into the Azure portal, you will be logged into the console. So let's say you just want to deploy a virtual machine and this something happening inside the virtual machine, you can just drop to the console, and since you're already logged in, you can just you don't have to authenticate, you don't have to do anything.
So it's almost like an embedding of the
CLI into the Azure portal.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So it's a cool feature.
Nice.
And it's really useful because one of the questions we are asked very frequently is, how am I going to authenticate to Azure, you know, service principles and stuff?
I get that all the time.
Yeah, so it's going to give you an easy way. Next news, Microsoft joins the Linux Foundation. Microsoft joins the Linux Foundation. So it's one of the platinum members now. Microsoft have a seat in the board. What does that mean? It means Microsoft will be more, you know, actively contributing to all the projects running in the Linux at Open Source World.
It's a good one to end on right there.
It's one of the biggest contributors now, though.
GitHub, it was.
And we already have the VM Depot website from the Microsoft Open Source.
Yeah, Microsoft Open Tech.
VM Depot is being deprecated?
No, it's incorporated to the
marketplace
in the portal, and now you do not have to go to the VM Depot to download the Linux images. Mm-hmm. You can use the Azure Marketplace in the new portal.
Yeah.
Not the new portal, because it is the
portal. Well, the new portal now is the console.
Exactly.
Oh, man. So that's the new portal.
Let's get more confusion.
The new
hybrid portal. The new updated console.
The new hybrid portal was not hybrid, because it doesn't on-prem. Not hybrid. Let's spin.
I guess it's you or me, huh? I guess
throw
it's
spin.
Me.
Oh, right. Throw spin.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
The game there.
There you go.
Right, really nice work. Did you have any other names?
Yeah, I'll just put them in the blog post.
Right. Okay. That means you'll put them in the blog post.
Okay.
Go.
All right. Well, I will start, I'd say probably most recent, with a new announcement we have around Mesos. No, not Mesos. Yeah. No, Kubernetes. We have Kubernetes, as Uwe's mentioned, running on top of ACS, but we also have Deas quick start documentation around being able to bootstrap Deas cluster with Kubernetes documentation, so go check that out. It's kind of handy. So for those of you who aren't aware, Deas, at least their workflow product, enables you to really streamline a lot of the management of deploying things and operating your workloads on top of Kubernetes. So it sits right on top of native Kubernetes and runs, and you can run that on top of ACS. So,
and it's really straightforward. Like, I really like, it's just like, step one, step two, step three, you have a cluster running Kubernetes and Deas running on top.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of the things, it shortcuts a lot of the things for you to do, like routing, and some of the things are kind of there out of the box that you'd have to think about or dive deeper into Kubernetes for. So, you know, it's worth looking into. Yeah. So another thing we have is a hosted in VSTS. So there's been 6 releases of VSTS. Since our last talk, so we'll just try and cover some of the highlights here. One of them was around a hosted Linux pool preview. So there's, of course, in VSTS you can have private and hosted agents, or kind of your two options. Your private ones, obviously anything you want to bring, whether it's a Mac or Linux or Windows, whatever. But then the hosted agents are ones that we just have for you up in the cloud. And those ones are, you know, you get 240 free minutes a month, or, you know, you can pay by the minute after that. But that was based on a Windows VM, right? Even though you had some kind of open source tasks like Ant and, you know, Maven and Gradle and some of the things that are cross-platform that run on there, you now can have a hosted Ubuntu-based agent that runs for VSTS. And that's available as well. And with that comes our VSTS Docker containers, so that you can run the VSTS agent with Docker. So anything that you want to pull in image-wise, tests, pull down with VSTS, you can, you know, work with it in that way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, anything you want to add to that? No? Okay.
It's very cool.
Yes. Okay. So then the other thing I have is around release management. So we've been talking about release management for quite some time, but the general availability of release management in VSTS and in TFS 2017 is now there. So it's something that if you haven't been using, or you've been on the fence, you're not sure if you want to use release management, there's been not just GA because it's GA, but we've actually been testing it, getting input from customers, and we've put a ton of different features in. There's no way I have a chance to cover all the enhancements, even in the past 6 releases for release management, but it's something you definitely want to do, because it's really the foundation, especially as a ops or DevOps person. You know, you want to have some form of, you know, a lot of the DevOps practices are all lit up via, you know, your build and continuous deployment release process, right? Days should be gone of the
manual deployments, right? Yeah. So yeah, check out release management. There's one feature I'll call out, a variable group, which is kind of cool. So, you know, if you've got different environments, you know, dev, stage, QA, whatever, you know, you may have certain variables that you want to have access from different build definitions. Maybe you have, you know, the same server name that you want to use across different releases or definitions. So you can have a variable group now and then have that variable group be accessible by different release definitions for secrets or for server names, things like that. So that's kind of cool. Let's see. What else? What else do we have? One of the other things that we have is Microsoft Teams integration. So if you use Microsoft Teams and you are using, let's say, the Kanban features for managing your work, that there is now a native integration for Microsoft Teams inside, or for VSTS Agile features and work item management inside of Microsoft Teams. So that's pretty handy if you want to, you know, just work with your teams and manage your work without having to necessarily go to the Visual Studio console to do that. And then in a related news to that, we also have team room deprecation. Ooh, why am I having an announcement around team room deprecation? Yeah. So we kind of, there we go. End on that, right?
Yeah. So, tune in next time.
Yeah. So it's good, right? I mean, we, you know, I think with that flip side of that, I want to just call out that, you know, Visual Studio Team Services has lots of hooks. You don't have to use it for everything. And what we find a lot of people is they integrate their Slack or Microsoft Teams or HipChat or Campfire, whatever their, you know, typical places where they have their chats in with Visual Studio Team Services. So you can see things like code commits, work items, builds, releases. We integrate with all those. So we just said, let's just make even better support for all those things and not continue on with that, right? Mm-hmm. Part of DevOps, right? Operating with DevOps is you got to know what things people are using and realize what's technical debt and what's not, right? So I think that's a good example for maybe you or other development teams to say, hey, look, what are people using? What are they not, right? And then make decisions. So there you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is that everything?
That's it.
Nice work. Right. Osvaldo, it's you up. Hang on.
You want it though, the pen.
The pen is up. We always give our new guests a pen on their first.
Yeah.
It's just customary. Right.
So from the...
Hang on. I've got to start your timer. I can't just have 5 minutes and 10 seconds. Right. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. So from the Microsoft's perspective, we have some types of technologies we can use in the Microsoft side. So we can use, for example, the Service Fabric. It's more like an infrastructure as a service perspective to host your microservices. And one problem, the operations guys always ask for the team, for the Service Fabric team, is how to patch the virtual machines who host the applications or who host the microservices. So it's not possible until yesterday. Mm. And yesterday, the Service Fabric teams put a post in the blog and with a roadmap with what you can do to update your virtual machines on your microservices solution on Service Fabric. And the first wave, you can just update using a manual script. You can download it in this blog post. We're going to put in our posts and tweet this in our account. So then in March, we're going to have a next step in our next wave, and we can go and update the virtual machines for the microservices in Service Fabric using the portal or using a new way. He called it the patch orchestration service to update these machines and update in a like in a fault domain and update domain way of
so it shows your application is always online. Yeah,
it's like you maintain your applications running and update on another domain and have a fault and guarantee your application will be on the air when you do the application. And then on July, we're going to have a different wave. It's more like you can choose and a specifically version of the operational system with some patches specifically for your application. For example, if you use some DLL or something, it's very attached for the in the operational system. You can build your image maybe and put in a gallery, and they will use this. It's one approach. But for the Microsoft's perspective, you can use the like more infrastructure host like a SaaS Fabric, but we can use more like a platform as a services for host your microservices. So now, not now, sorry, in November 15, we put in a general availability for the Azure Functions. And Azure Functions is a huge step for our platform as a service, because now we can run applications like small pieces of our applications. For example, I can put some webhook on GitHub to when some guy from your developer teams checking the application, Azure Functions can receive the information from the GitHub and send this information, for example, to the Slack, and your teams will be noticed or notified about this information, and could use, and you're going to pay just for each time your application runs. For example, if I use a bot in my functions service, for example, I can have a lot of instances of bots running beside my functions, and these functions will be activated and have the auto-scaling to update and to run the bots as a demand, and I will just pay for peanuts just for each time it will run. Mm. It looks like more like a mainframe perspective. You're going to pay with any APS when you just pay for the transaction, something like this. It's an approach more for this side, because in some cases you do not have something to provision some virtual machines, and just for looking for a forum has an update or something like that. And so this is a different approach from SaaS Fabric. And you need to choose what type of your host for SaaS Fabric you can use. We asked, you talked to early about this type of thing we can choose. For example, if I do not have any ops guy in my site, for example, if I'm a startup, I can not have an infrastructure guy.
The moment you said you would not have an IT pro.
And you know, and you can use this type of things to have a time to market and type of thing. Just 5 minutes or so.
Yeah, it goes great. Yeah, good stuff. Cool. Anything you want to add? Anything more?
Azure. I mean, Service Fabric update, that's all that matters for Azure in the past.
I thought Service Fabric, you just wanted to let that stuff go. It was almost like consuming a very specific PaaS type experience. But I'm guessing you do have to maintain the VMs as well yourself.
Yeah, well, that's something that's...
Or you should.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be more streamlined as well, right, in the future. But yeah, I mean,
yeah. I thought the optimal scenario for a PaaS type experience is... The service fabric. When you say I need a new service fabric, Microsoft deploys the VMs under the covers behind the scenes. We manage and maintain and patch them and handle all that. Whereas you just consume the service fabric essentially. But I'm guessing right now it's the VMs.
Functions are focusing on what they call the serverless way. But we all know we have a servers from behind.
Yeah.
The difference is in the functions, for example, you do not have to put the patch and update the machine.
Yeah. Like the service fabric. Yeah. You never interact with that machine directly.
Will there be a service fabric on Azure Stack?
I don't think it's in the GA launch of Azure Stack, but I presume it will, if it's deemed appropriate, it will come. I can't remember what the status is right now, but yeah, it'd be a good candidate. But because you can run it on-prem anyway, just in Windows Server VMs, is that right?
Even in Linux.
Yeah, so you don't need Azure or Azure Stack, but if you want to visualize the rich portal as part of Azure or Azure Stack, then it needs some integration. So who knows, I think we'll find out soon enough. So yeah, that's it for Azure, for OSS, for on-prem infrastructure, and for DevOps stuff. Let's have a quick check to see where we're up to on Twitter. We are up to, brace yourself for this. Let's go back.
400 something people.
It was 409 followers.
Nine.
409. Ooh. Right, mark the date, January. We are on 409 followers. There you go. So we're going to go up from here. So yeah, nothing else to say. Hopefully you've enjoyed the show, and we will, I guess, see you again next time. Maybe next week, maybe next month.
Next time.
Generic abroad. Live from the ops team studios. Yeah, we'll see you again. Thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye.